Quaker Meeting in Portland, Oregon.
You can find more information about our community at westhillsfriends.org.
As a Quaker community, we encourage everyone to share from their hearts,
especially as it pertains to God's leading in their lives.
These words are shared into a community that values the opportunity to respond and dialogue about what is said.
The responses and dialogue are not included in this recording.
The views expressed in this content are solely those of the original contributor
and do not necessarily speak for the entire West Hills Friends community.
Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful day.
16 years ago, I graduated college. That summer was the last summer I saw many of the friends I had made over the previous 4 years. College, especially for those of us who lived on campus, became a village. I'd run into friends on the way to and from class, sitting on a sunny patch of grass, and join them for even just 5 minutes. These interactions, repeated over many days, were effortless. No need to compare schedules, no need to remember to text someone back. The village-like environment disappears as we splinter off into our isolated lives. Our bump-ins reduce greatly, and the effort needed to stay connected increases. One only needs to type the word friendship into the New York Times search bar to find piles of articles describing the friendship crisis younger generations are experiencing. I'm just too old to have ever used dating apps. I only heard stories of swiping left or right from younger folks describing how they'd reject or accept potential matches, romantic matches, with a quick gesture of the thumb. It made me wonder if my mother's "we don't meet strangers on the internet" warnings were antiquated. We millennials, the last generation to be able to say, "I was born before the internet was a thing," have thrown some of our parents' caution to the wind and have acclimated to this new way of meeting people. A few months ago, sensing the lack of friends in my life, I typed into the Apple App Store search bar, "friend making apps." Just as in the dating world, the options for such apps are varied and targeted towards diverse demographics. I eventually found one that had promise of aligning me with people with shared interests. I created an account, and within minutes was presented with my first stranger, a carefully chosen photograph, underneath which were various descriptors, pronouns, sexuality, age, location, and a handful of interests served to paint the most basic of introductions. As I browsed through all of these people, something stood out to me. Many of them included another descriptor. I recognized some of them immediately, like the four letters that have come together to define much of my personal work as of late, ADHD. But there were many others, right in line with 32, they/them, PDX, like ASD, autism spectrum disorder, or HI, for hearing impaired, or TBI, for traumatic brain injury. Alongside many of the sharing about disabilities came honest sharing like, "I may be hard to talk to at first," or, "if you don't hear from me in a while, it's not because I hate you." I found this type of sharing so refreshing. As I shared last week during Joys and Concerns, I have only recently been diagnosed with ADHD and have begun actively figuring out how I can safely and happily move through my life with it. I have spent 3 decades plus of my life utilizing the tools of shame and guilt alongside the inherited Protestant work ethic to mask the struggle my brain has to be organized and present. I've berated myself for 3 decades, telling myself I was lazy, messy, scattered, and that no one will ever take me seriously as a result. I pushed myself to present as hyper-responsible, driving myself to complete tasks with the warning, they'll be mad at you if you don't do this thing right now. I turned 38 last month and alongside my therapist discovered that likely running on this negative self-critical energy for 3 decades has finally caught up with me. I'm really struggling to mask and push anymore. So when strangers on the internet showed me that it was not only normal, but beneficial to the prospects of establishing meaningful relationships with someone to share the unique way our brains and bodies work, I felt relieved. After my diagnosis, I spoke with relatives about it and found in their response a different energy. There were concerned, oh, followed by questions that told me that this was something to be ashamed of and to keep as quiet as possible. It reminded me that the same culture that burdened me with the Protestant work ethic still had no room for talk of disability as anything but something which makes you weird and hard to be around. I grew up afraid of struggling in school and being tested for a learning disability in the event I'd need to go to the special ed office. Sadly, in the context in which I grew up, the students receiving specialized education were kept separate from the rest of the neurotypical students. They traveled to school in different buses. To have a disability felt like a curse. I thought of this when I recently read the 9th chapter in the Gospel of John. Admittedly, I cannot stand this story. I can't stand the way the disciples responded, and I don't even like how Jesus responded. So there we go. I don't always like that guy. So I squirmed when I read the verses about Jesus and his followers talking about a man born blind from birth that they noticed seemingly just walking around together. It felt kind of like when you see somebody with a disability and you kind of whisper about them. The text reads, "As he walked along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?' Jesus answered, 'Neither this man nor his parents sinned. He was born blind so that God's works might be revealed in him.'" The disciples did not ask the question, "Does sin have anything to do with this person's situation?" They were already convinced of that. They wanted to know who did the sinning. They already believed that a disability was a curse, that it was some kind of punishment from God for sinful behavior. By the way, I don't like that Jesus still used someone's disability to say that God gave it to them for a reason. That's why I don't like how Jesus... I don't like that response, but more on that later. I still feel something like embarrassment to speak openly about my ADHD. And yet, inspired by the openness and embrace of disabilities modeled by younger generations, I have begun to feel more open. These young folks are already creating communities where folks are able to be with one another, extending grace, understanding, and accommodations are extended for one another. They are disrupting the narrative that our disabilities are curses. Nancy Eisland wrote a book called The Disabled God, which argues that traditional images of God, especially those that lead to views of disability as either a blessing or a curse, are inadequate. Within her own experience, she wondered whether such a God could even understand disability, let alone be meaningful to her. While working at a rehab hospital, she asked the residents what they thought about this. A young Black man said, "If God was in a sip puff, maybe he would understand." Nancy says, "I was overwhelmed by this image. God in a sip puff wheelchair. The kind used by many quadriplegics that enables them to maneuver the chair by blowing and sucking on a straw-like device. Not an omnipotent, self-sufficient God, but neither a pitiable, suffering servant. This was an image of God as a survivor, as one of those whom society would label not feasible, unemployable, with questionable quality of life." After this interaction, Eisland makes the connection between this image of God in a sip puff wheelchair and the resurrected Jesus appearing to his followers and showing them his injured hands and feet alongside the wound on the side of his body. She says, "This wasn't exactly God in a sip puff, but here was the resurrected Christ making good on the promise that God will be with us, embodied as we are, disabled and divine." I'm continually fascinated by the potential of communities like ours to disrupt cultural narratives which create in us a sense of what is normal. I'm not sure any of us are trying to form a case for the survival of the church, but should I be pressed? It is precisely the opportunity gathering as a body offers to us to be aware of the way cultural narratives have permeated our lives, and once aware, begin to support one another into living into another way. Just as we have begun to challenge the narrative of heteronormativity and the cultural norms established by white supremacy, we have already discovered how difficult it is to challenge norms and come face to face with our defensiveness, our confusion, and our anxiety. And yet, it seems that we followers of God's light have the potential to create and sustain a beloved community which leans into an embrace of the fullness of ourselves. Here's some queries for waiting worship. As you sit with the full picture of who you are, where do you feel comfortable to be completely you? How do those places encourage all of you to emerge? How have you become aware of the normative narratives that have influenced the way you interact with others? How does your spirituality challenge you to deepen the grace and understanding you extend to others?
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We're really happy that so many of you are finding it to be helpful and as a way to stay connected with what's going on with us here at West Hills Friends. If you'd like to stay connected with us in other ways, we have a couple options for you. You could check out our website. It's westhillsfriends.org. There you'll find some more information about who we are as a community. You could also follow us on Facebook. We have a Facebook account by just searching for West Hills Friends. You can also follow us on Instagram. We have a Instagram account with the name West Hills Friends. So we hope that you'll get connected with us in other ways. And again, thanks for taking the time to listen to this podcast.